The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Shalom and welcome to the synagogue. This is a podcast for consenting adults for information, education, and entertainment on BDSM, sexuality, and all things related. If you're not a legal, enthusiastically consenting adult, then
pick up the needle, press pause, or turn the radio off.
For those who remain, now might be a good time to switch to your headphones.
Welcome to the synagogue. I am your host. They call me the rabbi.
Pretty fly for a rabbi.
I put the sin in synagogue, and I am a cisgender, ambimorious, gynosexual, sadistic, bratty, daddy, dog. Sex therapist by day, kink educator by night, and in both these roles, I help people make their kink a religious experience. While I am a mental health professional, this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not a replacement for therapy. Seek out the assistance of a trained professional for help with your specific situation. Hosting with me today is my partner, my ADHD squirrel wrangler, my submissive, my brat, my pony, or just my little pony. The Juliana to my Evan, little bit. This is episode number 6, and with us today is Lady Steele to talk to us about BDSM and the law.
Hello!
So, people participate in bondage, discipline, and sadism slash masochism all the time, not knowing the potential legal pitfall. It is time to get down to brass tacks. What legal dangers are inherent to what it is we do? The simple truth is legal issues abound when it comes to participating in BDSM and always have. It can affect several areas in our lives, including family, criminal, civil, estate planning, healthcare, and even business law. How can you prepare yourself for the worst case scenario? Find out as Lady Steele tells us about BDSM and the law, which will also include the newest updates from the National Coalition of Sexual Freedom. But first, a word from our sponsor. Word! Lady Steele is a femme, lesbian, alpha, leather slave with multiple neurodiversities. She is an international presenter and resides in Atlanta, where she is the only open, out, and practicing attorney in the United States who specializes in the issues that arise in the BDSM and ethical non-monogamy community. Education is her passion, and she has taught hundreds of classes over 15 years, both in person and virtually. She's the founder of the Center of Learning and School of Success class, the Worthless Bastard Cigar Club, WBC Atlanta, and the Leather Coutier TLC, and proudly leads all of these groups under the umbrella of West Inclusive Georgia Socials Wings Group. Lady Steele has held various positions in both the former chapter of NLA Atlanta and the Leather Leadership Conference. Lady Steele is also a proud associate member of the Southern Leather Chapter of the Onyx Pearls. Thank you for being here in the synagogue, Lady Steele. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm so glad to be here. Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I had a very busy day at work and then had a very busy day at home. And now I'm glad to be here relaxing cool. with the two of you.
So tell us a little about BDSM and the law.
Tell me about the last 12 years of your career. Okay.
Well, I'm going to assume we have to start with some sort of disclaimer that you are a lawyer,
I do. I really should do that, shouldn't I? Hello, everybody. My name is Lady Steele, Attorney Lady Steele on FetLife. I am an attorney licensed to practice in the state of Georgia. I have practiced in other states on a case-by-case basis, but I have to be let in by the highest level courts in those jurisdictions in order to do that. So I can't say that I can't, but it takes a little more effort. So everything that I will talk about tonight will be coming from a Georgia law perspective. Also, this is not any sort of discussion that is to constitute an attorney-client relationship. There's no expectation of confidentiality. So if you live in another state, this is Georgia law, not where you are law. No assembly required, batteries not included. So yeah, I think we're good. So in other words, this isn't, if you're in Georgia or whether you're not, this does not constitute legal advice. I'm just a highly educated layperson with a particular certification talking to y'all about what I've been doing for the last 12 years.
Nice.
Contents may have settled during shipping.
Correct.
So where do you start to tackle this topic?
You know, it's funny. I was in law school, oh goodness gracious, sakes alive Moses, 2006 is when I started. And I went originally, and a lot of people don't know this, you're getting the scoop. I originally went to law school because my best friend and soulmate that I had known since middle school or junior high died from taking ephedra whenever it was out in, you know, convenience stores everywhere. And she was trying to lose weight for her wedding, and it gave her a heart attack at the ripe young age of 27, and she passed away. And so I was determined I was going to be a products liability attorney. True story. And then my first semester of law school, I took torts. And I was like, yep, nope, we're not doing that. So I just kind of continued ambling my way through law school, and I got to know folks in the BDSM community here in Atlanta, and I am based out of Atlanta, and I'm still based out of Atlanta even then. And I met up with a gentleman that goes by Lord Cuff on FetLife, the original LC, and he has been practicing law almost as long as I've been in the world, and that is not a short period of time. And he said, you know, look, he was kind of like Willy Wonka, which of course is like my favorite movie from my childhood, right? He was like, I don't want to keep doing this forever, you know? So yeah, it's just something that you're interested in practicing. And I had thought about different marginalized communities and the legal resources that they had available to them. And I'm like, well, you know, because I'm a member of the LGBT community, and I'm like, yeah, they have land illegal. And I looked around and I was like, you know what? Yeah. Cause I mean, you don't hear about, at least not back then, about a lot of people specializing in the special issues that come up with people in the BDSM world or in the ethical non-monogamy world. And so I went to a couple of his BDSM and the law classes, which is why I still call them that. And I was hooked. And so he started teaching me about the things, you know, all that he had practiced. I mean, he's been in front of the United States, I believe the United States Supreme Court, definitely the Georgia Supreme Court. And he mentored me, and he came to my first time presenting. That was before I had a bar card. I was in law school. And of course, I gave all those disclaimers, right? And so I've taught that class, this class, oh, goodness gracious, if I had to guess, probably at least 50 times since then, at least. I would have to sit and actually count it up. But that's sort of how I got my start. I worked for a family law attorney and then a criminal attorney, because those are the two major areas. And I got two really big clients at once. I also was diagnosed with cancer, and I was undergoing treatment at the same time. And I was like, you know what? I can't do full-time work anymore. And so while I was still undergoing chemo, I started my law firm as the kinky attorney. And that's what I've been doing, well, up until last September. I'm still doing this just on a part-time basis now. Well, thank you.
So not something you set out to do from the start, just a fun detour.
I wanted to represent people who were marginalized or did not have great big huge organizations backing them, you know, and thank God for Lambda Legal, don't get me wrong. But they existed already, you know. And so whenever I thought about it and I listened to Lord Cuff's, you know, pitch about it, basically, I was like, yeah, this is what I was destined to do. And here I am.
Very cool. So I know something I heard at my very first play party at the newbies orientation was, assume everything we do is illegal. How good of advice is that?
I usually open up my class with that. Everybody, you know, sits and I tend to use humor as a way to kind of break the ice. You know, we'll sit around and we'll chit chat and I'll get up there, get the real super serious face on, and I'll say, all right, this is the first thing y'all need to know. Everything we do is illegal. Everything. Unless you're in Florida and it is a simple battery or a simple assault to which you can consent, everything we do is illegal because consent is not a defense yet. When I first started this, it wasn't even on the horizon, but thank goodness for the National Coalition of Sexual Freedom, which has made it a possibility.
They do good work in the mental health field as well.
Oh, absolutely. They're amazing. Absolutely amazing.
So what are some of the big issues that people run into that they come to you for help with?
If I had to, not that I'm going to sit here and do math because I'm a lawyer, not an accountant, but maybe get at it.
No, I don't math. I sign. I don't.
She's like, nope, I don't math either. Screw that. I wish Meta was here because he definitely maths. But anyway, but yeah, if I had to, I would say the largest chunk of the pie, like the Thanksgiving piece of pie share, has to do with family law. And it's either people getting together wanting to make sure that they don't screw anything up in the end, or they're ending everything and one person is trying to accuse the other of cheating or, you know, domestic violence or something to that effect in order to either get the children, keep the children, or get the assets and keep the assets. And then, you know, of course, it doesn't necessarily have to be a divorce. It could also be, you know, legitimation and or custody visitation or even child support arguments. I mean, I've seen it all. And a vast majority of the time, I have people that come to me who, two big categories, either their exes, whether spouse, partners, whatever, are trying to use the life against them. I call it life, not lifestyle, because a style you can change, a life you can't. So they are using the life against them. And I was shocked, y'all, shocked at the number of times this has happened over the last 12 years where they had, my client, had an attorney who would not zealously represent them, which is against bar rules, by the way, because they thought they were dirty or immoral or unethical or something to that effect. And they came to me because, I mean, they acted all ashamed and everything else. I'm like, oh no, you've come to the right place. you're fine, I promise. And so I had more than a few clients from, you know, those places. And then the other smaller numbers, I've had other attorneys call me and say, hey, I understand you're the one that can translate these terms for me. I said, I will do it as long as you promise not to judge. And they were like, okay. And, you know, because I don't care what they think of me because I am completely open and out in everything that I do, even now, since taking the second job that I've got. But yeah, it's it was amazing and shocking to me at how many attorneys, professional people, judge the clients and dump them as clients because they just weren't having it. After that, I would say criminal law. So if people prosecute, you know, their former partners, spouses, play partners, whatever, usually for sexual assault or assault and battery. Or unfortunately, you know, somebody gets egregiously hurt or experiences serious bodily harm and they end up going to a mandated reporter like a doctor, a therapist, something like that, and they don't understand what's going on and how consent plays into everything that it is that we do if done properly. Then they ended up reporting, and then it becomes a domestic, if I say DV, I mean domestic violence, a domestic violence, you know, investigation. And I was just in the state 2 weekends ago teaching. I was in Oregon, and in Oregon, if a DV call is made, an arrest has to be made before the police leaves. There is no, you know, let me talk to everybody involved and see if we can get, you know, the straight story. And that surprised me because here in Georgia, they like to arrest somebody, but if all the stories aren't jiving exactly the way they should, they'll arrest both people and say, we'll figure it out in the end. Not that I think that's necessarily a better method, but it just surprises me, you know, how different states handle this across the country. After that, that's whenever it kind of gets into kinky folks who happen to be, you know, ethically non-monogamous. And estate planning was a sizable chunk of what it is that I do, you know, because poly marriage, and I hate using the term poly because of the Polynesian cultures, you want to take it back, but the ethical non-monogamy communities, we don't have anywhere to go to get married except for like two little places in Massachusetts right now. I mean, and that's okay because that's how it gets started, right?
Right.
You know, we had Vermont and Hawaii and other places allow people of the same gender to get married, and eventually, you know, it became legal. But as of right now, ethical non-monogamy and folks who practice that, the marriage is, in other words, more than two. You know, it's not allowed. And so that was a big part of it. Then there was, you know, pieces of work here and there of starting businesses or dissolving businesses, like, you know, dungeons, going over non-disclosure agreements and, oh goodness, premises liability agreements, you know, the waivers that you sign when you go to events. I've done a lot of different things, and it always surprises me how, you know, the next thing that I hadn't even thought about how what it is that we do can affect it.
Absolutely.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I've been a busy woman for 12 years.
I mean, I would have to imagine, since, as your bio says, you're the only open and out kinky lawyer, you get all of it rather than specialization in a particular field.
Over the last few years, I started feeling like Willy Wonka. And as I was prolifically traveling, because, I mean, you know, you have to travel to teach, and I love teaching, but it's also good marketing, of course, you know, let's be real. And as I was doing that, I mean, it's whenever I met y'all, as I was doing that, you know, it got to the point to where I'm like, really, guys, yes, this is my claim to fame, but eventually my son is going to be grown and I'm going to want to travel the world and not deal with this anymore. Where are you? And the more I put out there that I wanted to meet more folks like me, the more I realized that there's a lot of people like who are on the kink aware professional lists that the NCSF puts together. But the problem is they can't be open and out about it because of their families or their, you know, situation with an ex-spouse and their children, mm-hmm. or a situation with their current spouse, you know, or and maybe their family, you know. And so I guess it's fortunate that, I don't know, at whenever I graduated law school, I was just like, I'm never going to hide who I am, because I never wanted anyone to be able to hold that against me, and especially not my client. And so I have stood in circles of very high-level people in the government. And I will never forget this conversation. I was at the state bar, and I was taking a continuing education course, right? And all of these adoption attorneys were standing around. I'm like, ooh, adoption. Let me check this out. And I walked over, and this was before we had laws here in Georgia to help protect same-gendered people who were married if they got artificial insemination or had a surrogate, you know, protecting the non-biological partner. As a matter of fact, I was just talking about this on somebody's Facebook today anyway. And so I said, so when do you expect polyamory, you know, because that's the term we use then, polyamory being allowed in adoptions, you know, having more than two parents? You could have heard a record scratch. And this was not that long ago. I mean, it's been at least probably sure. Since my son's been in the world. So at least in the last 9 years. And so like they were just so shocked. And I'm like, wait, y'all live in the big city, right? It's not like where I am now, because I'm in far west Georgia now. And like I expected them to be way more, I guess, cool about it, or at least knowledgeable about it. And they stood there and picked my brain for a good 20 minutes, but they still walked away looking like, you know, something smelled. And I'm like, well, this is me, you know, as we were talking before the podcast, where I'm here, I'm queer, and get over it, you know. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting adventure watching everything change in the last couple of decades I've been a part of this life. And I'm so happy to have been, you know, at least a small part of that.
I had a client, I think it was a year or two ago, who was in a polycule, and they were looking to adopt. And I was shocked to hear that their social worker was so enthusiastic about it, thought it was a great bonus that this child was basically going to get four parents instead of two.
The mitzvah. Yeah. I mean, this is the synagogue after all. So.
I mean, like, I was expecting to hear the worst from this client, and I heard that and was like, oh, yeah, for awesome.
Sure. Wow. See? And, you know, that kind of reminds me, you know, and I don't know when you were ready to segue into the NCSF stuff, but the day after what I'm going to talk about here in just a few minutes went into effect with a model penal code, a friend of mine who is a investigator for public defense attorneys, he was working for a particular county at that time, And it wasn't like one of the major Atlanta counties. It was like one of the outlying ones, but still part of the metro area. And so he gets on an elevator. It's 5 o'clock and everybody's going home. And he's, you know, of course, defense attorneys, no prosecutors, right? And two prosecutors got on the elevator and my friend was playing with his phone, minding his own business. And he overheard them talking. I mean, it's an elevator. Where are you going to go? You know? And one person said to the other, hey, did you hear what just happened in regards to the model penal code and consent? And the other person said, yeah, I remember reading about that. And they said, thank God we can now prosecute the cases that matter. So people are out there getting to know us, whether it be through cheesy, horrible movies like 50 Shades or whatever, and the books that are written about it that's fiction and not and all of this, and they're starting to realize there really is nothing to see here, move along in most cases. And, you know, it's a bell curve like anything else. But, yeah, people, at least in my profession and in my circles, legal circles meaning, they don't want to get people hung up on stuff that they don't need to get hung up on. There's so many more important things to prosecute, and they're saying that this ain't it.
Good.
Yeah, very good.
Right.
You know, this is one of those things where it's like, all right, well, you know, people can start to breathe a little bit. Maybe not a whole lot, but just a little bit, especially if, you know, different entities are trying to make appropriate changes.
Sure.
You know.
See, I don't really call it, if I may interrupt.
Oh, absolutely. No, you're fine.
ADHD, y'all. It's okay. I'm sorry, I'm really bad about that. You know, I don't tell people it's time to breathe. I tell people it's time to wait and act. Because with everything that happened with the NCSF, it was not put into law, the codification of consent before and during a scene and how to rescind it. It was actually just, it was codified, but it was not put into law. And so now it's up to either the courts or the legislators to make that happen. And that's the wait part. Well, what can you do to help get out there and support organizations like the NCSF? You know, knock on doors, and if you're able to, if you need to be anonymous, you know, make phone calls from phone banks. They still exist. I had a friend that was just elected commissioner in the county where I work my day job now, just yesterday. And, you know, she had phone banks, good old-fashioned people knocking on doors and handing out flyers. I mean, that's still a thing. And a lot of people think, you know, in the age of electronics, oh, well, they can just send everything out in an email list. You might be surprised how many of our lawmakers still to this day either don't have email, and I'm not kidding, or don't read email. And that's, you know, to be expected. You know, that's what their assistants are for.
Right.
And so sometimes you just have to get in people's faces, not like in a mean way, but in a, hey, take a look at this. Would you like to talk to me about it way? And that's why I say wait and act, you know, be an activist. If you want to breathe a little bit, just tiny bit, like that first little lace from the corset, maybe just a little bit, but yeah. Now more than ever, it's the time to be active. And if all else fails and you cannot do any of those things, always give a contribution to the NCSF because they are volunteer run all the way up to the founder. Susan Wright doesn't get a paycheck. I don't get a paycheck. Nobody gets a paycheck for doing what we do for them. And so it is run by contributions and fundraising.
Can you explain for the lay people listening what codify means?
Oh, codify. Yes, I'm so sorry. So whenever lawmakers and judges, for that matter, are wanting to make something part of the law, believe it or not, they really do take that seriously, like very seriously, especially judges, especially elected judges. And so what they do is that they look at different codes, like it's called the Official Code. Oh, my goodness gracious. Official Code of Georgia, or OCGA. And so to codify something is to get it into the code. Now, I said it was not put into law, which it has not been. It was put into the Model Penal Code, and that's P-E-N-A-L. Get your minds out of the gutters. but the Model Penal Code, I would love for there to be another kind of Model Penal Code. That'd be amazing. But yeah, Model Penal Code, which is what lawmakers and judges look at. It's called a legal treatise. And so they're able to look at it as an influential resource, possibly for law, not one that is express or that is a required one, you know, a mandatory one. And so to codify something is to put it into a code somewhere. And depending on what code you put it in, depends on what kind of teeth it has, basically.
So it is a sample law that isn't a law, in simplest terms.
The model penal code is this. Okay, so think about this. I mean, y'all have been parts of elections, you know, and everybody listening to this likely has as well. And, you know, I'll use Georgia, for example. You know, we had a peanut farmer come up from Americus, is that where President Carter was from? Anyway, who came up and, you know, I believe he was, now I'm going back into my history books, a man who, you know, ran stuff in Georgia. I'm not going to say what because I don't remember at the moment, but eventually became president. But he was a peanut farmer. He was, you know, he didn't take a great deal of poli-sci classes. You know, he didn't take a great deal. You know, he wasn't born into a family where they'd been doing this for generations and where he was raised around it. And so people like that, and even the people that were, need guidance from heads higher than them. And that's what I love about the model penal code, because of course, penal meaning criminal law, right? So the model penal code is an example of what criminal laws, criminal code, in each of the states and the districts could possibly be. Which is why I tell people when I teach this subject, you know, about what we did with the NCSF and what they did, was to look at it as, and remember, as much as all of us in our community wants to see it passed 100%, always keep in mind that they can pass it in whole, in part, or not at all. And so they may look at this and say, oh, this is crap, you know, and just throw it in the garbage. Or they might go, we like this, this, and this, but we're not going to do the rest of this. Or other states may look at it, or other judges in the states may look at it and go, no, I like all of this. And as soon as either the legislature makes it part of the penal code in their particular state, or the judges make it part of a case, then it becomes, you know, case-made law or legislature-made law. And that's how it goes from being in the model penal code to the actual penal code, or at least the cases backing up the penal code in certain in the states that adopt that. And then say, let's say Georgia's the first one to do that. Maybe. if Georgia's the first one to do that, then Ohio, you know, could look at Georgia and go, hey, man, look at what they did in the courts. You know, if I was an attorney in Ohio, I could go, hey, Attorney Steele and, you know, down there in Atlanta argued this argument. The facts are very similar. What do you think, Judge? Again, an influential source of law, not a mandatory one.
Right.
And so, but if that judge agrees, then it becomes mandatory law in that state at whatever level the judge is. And so it is a painfully slow process, but it can happen.
So as a therapist, I like my analogies. The model penal code is the homework that you're copying into your own words.
That is absolutely correct. I tell people all the time the practice of law is nothing but plagiarism. People who wrote it way better than we did before us.
So before we transition into the NCSF stuff, I have a story I want to tell you because
I love story time.
So the first time I was introduced to you, let's put it that way, many years ago, it was a Sunday morning in St. Louis.
Yes.
You were teaching a class.
Yes.
This class, in fact.
Is it right?
It was packed full. I wound up sitting on the floor.
Oh, goodness.
Lil Bit was late because she was packing up the car.
As is tradition.
Mm-hmm.
this is true.
But I was very early in my journey, both as an educator and as a therapist, and I knew what I wanted to do. I didn't know how I wanted to do it. And I took your class. I said, that's it. That's what I want to be. I want to be open and out like that. I want to have a classroom full of people where it's standing room only. you know, as you said, you didn't know anybody who was open and out as a professional. And I didn't know anybody in my field, but you were the first person I came across who was like that, even though completely different fields. So I wanted to share that with you. And thank you for being that type of inspiration to me.
How long have we known each other and you've never told me that? I'm just like, oh my God, my eyes are leaking. Just like, oh, well, it's my pleasure to serve always. And I'm so glad that anything, any word, any gesture, anything that I do is an inspiration to anybody to get on their right path. And I know I'm definitely proud of the work that you do because it's needed. It's needed.
It's definitely needed. I mean, I've met people out in my field now who are there, but at that time it was zero. I didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
So it's been,
I think,
wonderful.
For some reason it's a little easier for people in the mental health field. I don't know. Maybe not. I guess it depends on where you live, I would suppose.
Yeah. Where we live, there is not even another sex therapist for 50 miles.
Whoa.
So
look
that
at you
was
having the exclusive market.
Yeah. I'm not going to deny that. I mean, that's how I was able to, you know you're the jack of all trades, because I get all of that too.
Yeah.
For the 50 miles around me.
Everybody always asks me, what do you specialize in? Because most attorneys specialize, especially in big cities. And I'm like, the BDSM and E&M communities. And they're like, well, what does that mean? Come to my class or listen to the Rabbi's podcast.
So transitioning, NCSF, they do a lot of great work. They helped get BDSM as a diagnosis, and now I'm forgetting the fancy word that was in the DSM.
Do I need to go grab mine?
It had some big fancy word. It used to be, if you practiced BDSM at all, you could be diagnosed as mentally ill. Now it is,
for sure,
if you do it and it causes a problem, then it is a diagnosis. And that was a big change, I want to say 2016. But
it's been relatively
very
recently, yeah.
Yeah, very recently. So they do great work in my field. Tell me what they do in yours.
They who? I'm sorry?
NCSF.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, Lordy. They write Friends of the Court briefs, or amicus briefs, amicus briefs. They are the ones, I mean, they have the Kink Aware Professionals list where people can look up people like me, you know, people in need, and go, hey, you know, my lawyer is not understanding the words that are coming out of my mouth. Can you help explain, you know, because I can not only talk to, you know, other attorneys on a life level, or this lifestyle level, but also on a legal level, and what that means. You know, because it's not just, oh, well, I think it's cool that people do that. Well, I can think it's cool all day long. It's still illegal as all get out. So, yeah, no. Oh, gosh, what did they not do? They go and they, you know, they have people like me educating people across the country how to, you know, try to get this explicit prior permission parts of the model penal code, you know, put into the codes of their states. I mean, they give us all sorts of support. I think one of the biggest things they do to support us, though, is because they are such a well-known and well-respected organization. You know, they're the second biggest lobbyist group in the United States, next to the NRA, proving that Americans like their sex and they like their guns. So there you go. Which comes as a surprise to no one in this conversation or who is listening.
Not
I'm
at
sure.
all.
Yeah, it's always the joke that I tell, you know, and depending on where you are, depends on how it lands. And I'm like, oh, right. I'm not in the South anymore. There we go. But yeah, I think one of the biggest helps that they do is, as an organization, because they are respected and they do good work and they've been around so long, that if I need a friend of the court brief written, then I can come to them and go, hey guys, you know, this is what's going on. This is the kind of case I have, you know, here are the basic facts, you know, not violating confidentiality, of course. Can you write a brief, you know, and of course other lawyers, right, who volunteer for the NCSF, can you write a brief to, you know, add to my case to kind of help me out here, because I think I'm, you know, I might be stumbling here. And to me as an attorney, that's one of the biggest things that they do that's valuable directly to my profession.
The word I was looking for before, paraphilia, was what was in the DSM.
Oh, yes.
Paraphilia, that's right. Yes. Gosh.
And
man, I hadn't heard that in a minute.
Yeah, for our listeners, the NCSF website is ncsfreedom.org, and the professionals directory is kapprofessionals.org. All sorts of professionals there, from therapists to lawyers, photographers, anything you might need where it is relevant, there are professionals on there. Are they in your area? Maybe, maybe not, but it's always worth a check.
And if not, then, you know, they might be able to do work. I mean, a lot of things happened over COVID where we can do business. I mean, I do divorces all the time that are uncontested. I never even meet the client because everything's virtual now, or not virtual, but like online, you know, we do e-filing and all that. So don't necessarily disqualify somebody just because they don't live close to you, you might be surprised. I mean, if you need like a medical doctor or something like that, yeah, maybe. But like a therapist, hey, what about Zoom? You know, as long as that's allowed in your state with your licensure. So absolutely.
Yeah. Therapy, yeah, crossing state lines varies from state to state, but there is a legal thing going on right now to erase those borders and, you know, make it so we can
telehealth
anywhere. I think like 35 states have signed on so far, if not more. But even if the person you reach out to can't help you, they might know somebody who can help you, who is closer, that may not be out and may not be on the list, so...
And I'm going to go ahead and toss my hat into the ring because, and I teach this in a lot of my classes whenever I talk about DV, domestic violence, that if you are in a situation, and it doesn't have to involve domestic violence, it could be anything, and you need an attorney's help and you can't find somebody on the, you know, King Court Professionals list or anything like that, write me on the FetLife, again, Attorney Lady Steele, all one word, three E's, not all in a row, because... I know a lot of people after doing this, and I can always go and go out on, you know, in Georgia alone, I run a Facebook group with over 1,000 licensed attorneys, licensed to practice in Georgia. And if I go out there and put the weirdest fact pattern and the weirdest circumstances, and I'm talking about, you know, I'm saying weird, right? you know, and go, hey, is there anybody who can help? I promise you, there's going to be somebody going, hey, I know a person, or hey, I am that person. And so, you know, the answer to all unanswered questions is, or unasked questions is no. And so don't do that to yourself. Don't, you know, fail before you've even started because you're afraid to ask. Definitely ask, because in situations like this, there are no dumb questions.
Especially when trying to make sure that, you know, you're following what you need to follow or doing what you need to do. And
that's right.
Also finding the help that you need to help and getting connected to the resources that could help you do lots and lots of better things, good things, all of that good shit.
That's right. You know, I tell people all the time, don't come into my life, into my BDSM world, and expecting us to be your therapist, be working on your shiz before you come in here, because can it be therapeutic? Absolutely. Should it be your exclusive therapy? Oh, no. I even think the rabbi would agree with me in regards to that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to work it if you're actually going to make strides on things. You are your own responsible adult.
Every day. Every day. Ooh, preach.
So what's one thing that you know now that you wish you knew at the beginning of your journey with all this?
That it was possible to piecemeal together a network even then, even if it was like a little tiny baby network, and then I could have grown it more. Like, I didn't look to network with other kinky attorneys that could possibly be open and out and practicing. Until, again, I hit the Willy Wonka stage, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to be backpacking across Europe here in just a few years. So, you know, so because I hear when I go to places, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, we've got this attorney that does that and this attorney that does that. And not everybody's going to have my qualifications and vice versa, you know. And so I wish I would have found the NCSF earlier, too. I mean, honestly, I found them... at some convention. I mean, you know how that goes. At some convention that you went to some number of, you know, decades ago or whatever, and became more involved with them quicker. Because as a solo practicing attorney, it's scary enough not having, you know, any sort of mentors or, like, you know, I work for a government entity now, and so I have everything at my disposal, right? I didn't have that for 12 years. Now, did I build a network? Yes. Did I build a network of kinky attorneys? Absolutely. Did the NCSF help with that? Absolutely, because I could go, you know, on the Kink Aware Professional site and call somebody up and go, hey, Chicago, how is this different than Atlanta, you know? Or, hey, you know, Savannah, Georgia, how are you similar? What's the temperature down there versus up here in Atlanta, you know, type thing. And so I was saying that it's like having that comforting authority figure behind you all the time. I might not ever use them in my practice, you know, until I retire. you know, for an amicus brief or something like that, but at least they're there. And there is a network, vast network of people that I can talk to if I have any questions or if something comes up I need to bounce someone off of. They're an everybody's like, well, you know, you should get paid for marketing for them. Well, no, I just speak the truth because they really are that awesome.
Very cool. So I'm sure somewhere along the line you have received pushback from professionals in your legal field. Tell me a little bit about that.
Are we talking kinky people in my profession or just anybody in general?
Oh, how about both? Let's make it fun and festive.
So let's spill the tea. Well, if you go on my FetLife and it doesn't go that far back, there is an individual, and I'm not going to name names because this is not that forum, who misunderstood what Susan Wright and I put out about the things that were put in the Model Penal Code codifying consent and what that looked like. And, I mean, you know, there was fault on both sides. Reading could have been better on their side, and writing could have been better on, you know, on our side. And so they're based here in Atlanta, and they're an attorney, corporate attorney, has never done anything like anything I've done, and just kind of ran with it. Like, you know, Lady Seal saying this is law, and I'm like, Lady Seal ain't said that, and I'm trying not to cuss on your show because you didn't tell me I could. But I'm like, no, sorry, Bob. Lady Seal did not say that, because that's Lady Seal's bar card if she says that, and I protect that only second to my kid. Because yeah, you work hard enough to get something. I mean, I'm sure you understand licensure, right? So yeah, you protect that, like, for real. And so there's a contingent out there. This human now teaches a kink in the law class, and I've had people contact me saying, we showed up to that class and that wasn't you. I'm like, no, because my class is what Lord Cuff called it, BDSM in the law. And so that was a very interesting little irritation for a minute. Well, not a long minute, you know, probably about a half a minute. But I was surprised by that because I feel, and y'all might get all sorts of mail or whatever it is that you get on podcasts saying, oh my gosh, that's not true. But I feel I've always tried to cultivate an air of inclusivity whenever it came to my fellow attorneys, because that's, again, like I said about the NCSF, you know, if I'm known as the authority, then I'm going to sit there and help everybody I possibly can, because, you know, the real winners are the clients. It's not us. It's not our bank accounts. It's not our egos. So that happened in the kinky world, and oh my goodness gracious sakes alive. Remember I told you there were some lawyers that judged their clients, and that's how I ended up getting them. Well, I was at this, oh gosh, this has been a long, long time ago. I was at this, kinky camping type event, and my, master and husband, the father of my child actually, and I were presenting a class that had nothing to do with the law. It was some over here, right? And afterwards, they were having a party, and there was a woman that was strapped to a cross, inverted, and her left side, or dominant, I don't know, lubed up and inserted a beer glass into her lady orifice, or I'm sorry, to assign female at birth orifice, and poured a beer in it and said, who wants to drink? Ooh. Now, I am the kind of person that sees opportunity. See, luck is nothing but the willingness to recognize opportunity. I'm sorry, the ability to recognize opportunity and the willingness to seize it. So I'm like, this is never going to happen again. This is never going to happen again. And so I went and took a sip, you know, and it was all, matter of fact, I think I was the only person that did. I mean, I've had cancer 4 times. I live dangerously, you know, and you're familiar with that concept. And so, yeah, after it was all done, she was like, I really want to talk to you. I'm like, well, hey, baby, you too. Yeah, type thing. And she was like, no, on a professional level. And I'm like, turn the car around. And I'm like, sure, what's going on? Well, long story short, she's actually out here in a town very close to where I'm sitting right now, out in West Georgia. Her mom had been a paralegal for this law firm her entire life. And whenever it came time for her to get a divorce from her husband, she went to this firm to get a divorce. Now, when they married, they were Southern Baptists and all of this. And along the road, they discovered ethical non-monogamy and BDSM. And they both explored it separately. but with consent from everybody involved. So it really was supposed to just be a draw up the paperwork. We have a couple of kids and assets, and let's be done with this sort of thing. It really was an amicable split, but the attorney that the husband hired and the wife hired, my future client, was just so acrimonious towards their own clients, saying they were sinners and they should be ashamed of themselves and blah, 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 and all this. And this poor woman had filed for divorce, and it had been 2.5 years after the settlement agreement was signed. Now, I have been in divorces. Yeah. I mean, in Georgia, you can get divorced probably about 45 days if everybody's in agreement, but it had been 2.5 years. And she was ready to move on, and he was ready to move on, but he had heard so much crap, you know, from his attorney. He thought she was the bad guy. She's sitting here with her hands in the air going, what is going on? And so I said, I got angry. I mean, this was early in my career. I got angry, and I'm too old to get angry these days. I just win cases. So I got angry, and I could have told them to mail me her documents, you know, her file, but instead I decided to go and pick it up in person. And I asked to speak to the attorney, because of course the person that picks up the files, they expected to be a courier, you know, a legal assistant, someone. I remember the secretary or the legal assistant, or no, she was probably secretary, receptionist, calling back to the old cishet male white attorney and saying, you know, here's an attorney here to see you on the bloody blah case, you know. And yes, the actual attorney. So he took me back into his office and I read him the Riot Act. How dare you? Well, you can't expect me to practice outside of my religious belief. I said, yes, that's exactly what we're supposed to do. I can tell you've never done criminal defense. So, yeah. And I mean, I read him the Riot Act and I grabbed that file and I got out of there really quickly. But yeah, that was, you know, I told the story about the adoption, attorneys too at the CLE, and it's fascinating to me how that is changing. And like you said, you know, the polycule that was adopting the child, you know, and that's fantastic, but I'm always shocked because I've been around for so long. I might have a few gray hairs somewhere. I don't know. I dye it, so it doesn't matter. You know, I am shocked when people are amicable, not acrimonious. And that's still kind of sad, but it's also the state and condition we live in and the state I live in. So, yeah, I've gotten it from both sides, and I've always stood my ground, and I've always gone, you know, hey, what's up? I went and interviewed for the job with the government that I work for now, and this woman wanted me so bad. And I said, sit down. I said, there's something you need to know because this office answers to commissioners, you know, blah, blah, and all this. And I told her everything. You hear me? And she said, oh, I'm reading a book on that. And it was like one of the fiction smut books, you know. And I'm like, And I'm like, I mean, like, I confessed everything about myself and Master Meta and everything. And she said, your experience in alternative communities will come in handy in this office. Cause like it's a small county and everybody knows each other. And I'm the outlying piece of data, and it really has come in handy. And, everybody at work absolutely knows, you know, who it is. And I've given a couple of them my FetLife profile. I'm like, hey, you want to check out what I do? Go. I went to Portland. I told them I was going to Portland to teach. I think my legal assistant asked if it was at King, you know, where it was, and I said Kinkfest, you know, and she might have looked it up, she might not, I don't know. But I am more surprised that people are open, and unfortunately I'm still not surprised if they're not.
Definitely.
Very fair. Yeah. I mean, I'm not quite as open and out as you are, but that's more of, you know, the nature of my work versus yours. I do have to keep those professional boundaries and my personal life away from my clients.
And you know what's funny? Yeah. And you know what's funny is that I find the opposite to be true in the practice of law. The more human you make yourself to your clients, the more apt they are to tell you everything. I mean, I can't tell you the number of clients, especially criminal clients, you know, they, you know, being prosecuted for assault and battery and rape and drug dealing and all this other stuff, you know, and they're afraid to tell little old me a story. I'm like, honey, I've heard it all. I promise. I promise you when I say this. And so I, you know, share a few stories from my own life, you know, of course, hiding the names of the guilty and the innocent, and, you know, letting them know that I'm not this person on a pedestal that a lot of people think a therapist or a doctor or an attorney is. And I think that is, you know, if there's any young aspiring or currently aspiring attorneys to do what I do or something like it, just know the more human you make yourself, and of course, keeping confidences and secrets and all of that. I mean, I keep secrets right. for a living. That's what I do. I mean, like, you have no idea what that's like, right? and so, you know, as long as you keep yourself humble and humane, then, you know, people will flock to you. Build it and they will come, literally.
Yeah, I'm open with clients, you know, that I'm kinky, that I live the lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. But I don't tell them, yo, we taught a class on chain fisting last week.
Right, right. And I've yet to catch that class. Totally got to do that.
But, you know, I have the wall that I installed last week of NCSF flyers and pamphlets.
Nice.
And I was actually surprised that some of my non-sex therapy clients would pick one up on their way out. So I'm hoping that opens up some dialogue with them.
Excellent.
In the future, because
that's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, with my line of work, it's a lot of permission giving, allowing these people to talk about sex for some the first time in their life.
Yeah, and for my profession, it's an impetus put upon them to tell me as much as they can, as succinctly as they can, and in a shorter period of time as they can, because time is money, and I need to get down to brass tacks, and I can't do that unless I know what's actually going on. And so, yeah. Oh, gosh.
Have you had a client that was hesitant to tell you everything, that didn't want to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the time. Well, in private practice, all the time, because the unfortunate phenomenon that we like to call the internet has made, and I don't know if you have this similar experience again as a licensed professional, where they go to, you know, LegalZoom or whatever, and they think all of a sudden they're, you know, Johnny Cochran and they know the law and they know everything about the law and all of this, and they're paying me $300 or more dollars per hour for the privilege of me sitting there looking at them like they're crazy. You know, pardon me, I shouldn't use that term in front of a therapist. But like, they're off their rocker, how about that? And like, I cannot tell you the number of times I've held up my hand and I said, okay, I need you to stop talking. And they'll look at me like, what? What's wrong? Aren't I smart? You know? And I've gone, okay, this can go one of two ways. You can either continue to pay me for you to talk, or you can pay me for me to talk. I promise you, if you choose the second one, you're going to get a whole lot more for your money. And that's whenever they're like, you know, oh, you know, poopies. Meta loves for me to tell this story. We were friends. We lost contact. Then I was a divorce attorney. And then, yes, an appropriate and long amount of time passed before we started dating. But when he called me, he Facebook messaged me up to be his divorce attorney, he actually said to me, and this is a quote, he's going to kill me when he hears this podcast, that he says, I hope this divorce is going to be so simple that you're just a glorified legal assistant that I paid a lot of money to. Y'all. When I say my head came unglued from my shoulders, I was like, I know this mofo did not sit here and just say that to me. And what's funny is that as the years have progressed, we've been in relationship 2.5 years now, and he has seen the work that I do, and he has sat in court, and he's seen the hours that I pour over preparation and, you know, that long hours that I work, you know, at my day job now. And he has apologized to me over and over again. He said, I now understand how incredibly offensive that was. And I'm like, well, I told you that at the time you said it. Just so you'll know, I have the Facebook messages if you want to go back and look at it. But yeah, you know, we you know, spend a lot of time and money of our own in order to be able to do this, and to have people sit there and try to preach law to you. And, you know, they know better. Maybe it's somebody who's getting a divorce for the second time, you know, or a third time or whatever. And because they learned everything they needed to know in the prior divorces, then all of a sudden they can tell me what to do. And I'm like, no, we're not going to do that. Because I am a slave to Master Meta. I am no one else's slave. And I'm certainly not a slave whenever it comes to my profession. And so, yeah, I mean, it happens more often than you might think. Now, I'll tell you this. For my vanilla clients, that happened more than my kinky clients. By the time my kinky clients reached me, they were so desperate for help that understood them. I mean, dom, sub, master, whatever the role was, they sat there with their hands folded in their lap, very polite, saying, yes, let's talk, you know, type thing. It was always the vanilla clients that thought that they, well, not always. I mean, nothing's absolute, right? But the heavily on the bell curve on the side of the vanilla clients that I had. Because some people were just referred to me and they didn't know what I did. You know, I had a couple of clients and over the last 12 years come to me and they didn't realize who I was. And then they found out right in the middle of representation. And I said, same thing every time. You got any questions, you let me know. And all of them but one were like, okay, and left it alone. And then the one client that asked me about it, we had a perfectly fine conversation. It was great. They're like, well, you know what? That's really fascinating, Miss Steele. So let's get back to my divorce. And I said, by the way, I'm not charging you for this part. You know that, right? Oh, okay. You know, phew. Talking about breathing, right? Like letting a breath out. But yeah, I've gotten it from all sides over the years, but I'm a tough old broad, so that's all that matters.
But you've never had a client, a vanilla client say, no, I can't work with you?
The only client I ever had, and this was an E&M client, which I thought it was kind of strange. There's a common practice in Georgia that whenever a divorce is completely uncontested, everybody signs the forms in advance, and then the paperwork comes after that. Now, of course, nothing is, you know, filed with the courts until, you know, everybody's read everything and everything's cool. So say if I got your signature notarized saying that you read, you know, the petition for divorce or whatever, and it hasn't been drafted yet, I would follow it up, you know, a day or two later, you know, with it. And that's very common practice in Georgia. And as long, and like 99% of everybody, well, all the clients I've ever had but one, had absolutely no problem with that practice. And man, this guy lost his mind about this. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. This is common practice. I, you know, well, you're wanting my ex to sign something about a document she hasn't even read. I can draft it if you like. It'll take me like 45 minutes, you know. I mean, he just like, I mean, he took his money and left. And I was like, okay. And I'm starting, you know, and I'm thinking maybe this is a generational thing. I'm Gen X. They're not, you know. So from this, that point forward, I started saying, you know, I had a client that came in fairly recently that was like, you know, uncontested divorce. And I said, you know, if you want to sign these papers ahead of time, you can, knowing that the paperwork is following it. But if you're not comfortable with that, paperwork can come first, signatures can come second. It's your choice. You know, as long as you don't get mad about it, right? But yeah, no, I've never had a vanilla client find out that I was kinky and said deuces. And I've certainly never had a kinky client, you know, leave like that. They found out I was vanilla, which would be hilarious. I'd love to know what website they found that on. Have to be the Shade Room or something. I don't even know. It's like, nope.
So in your career, kink career, whether it be professionally or personally, what's been your biggest failure and what did you learn from that?
Oh, good God. You mean an actual case or philosophy or practice or
any of the above?
Okay. I did not reach out and get the network. Again, I cannot reiterate this enough. Networking, you know, friend circles, poly circle, you know, whatever you want to call it, is so important because we get stuck in our heads sometimes and think, you know, I could do it. You know, I'm superhuman and I can do all of this stuff. And there, when there's so many people out there going, let me help you. And you know what? That was true in both my kinky life and in my professional life. I didn't get mentors until way later down the line in regards to the legal things. No, I'm talking like, you know, 2 or 3 years into private practice. And then in my kink life, I started out with really good mentors and I always held other people up to them and unfairly doing so, because in doing so, I possibly missed out on opportunities to learn that I might not have had, you know, just because they might not have been able to stand up to these paragons, these pillars of the Atlanta community, didn't mean they didn't have anything to offer. And so I was so set on, you know, people talk about the relationship escalator. Mm-hmm. Be careful of that when it comes to mentorship or teaching or learning. You know, that's why I get, you know, my panties, well, my non-existent panties in a knit, because, yeah, a lot of conventions or, you know, munches or whatever won't let you teach unless you have this many years experience. Well, first of all, how the hell are you going to know?
Right.
You know, people can lie about that. And people with several decades of experiences end up being, you know, creeps and predators and consent violators. We've all seen that across the country lately. You know, so it's like, if somebody has the absolute guts to stand up and say, I want to talk about this, you know what? You listen to them, because you never know when you might have, there may be something that you can learn from them. I love working with younger attorneys who are scared to death at this point, because they see my trial skills and they see me, you know, walking with confidence and all of this. But just every once in a while, you see that glimmer, and hold on to that glimmer, because that is what is going to enable folks like us that know what we know to pass it on, you know, to the future generations, as opposed to just becoming old and bitter, deucing out and saying, you know what, screw y'all, I'm going to take all my knowledge and, you know, go to the grave with it. Which, to me, that's the most insane, there I go again, ableist term. That is the most backwards thing that anybody can do, is live this life for decades and have seen the history, been a part of the history, you know, all of this, and then they get discouraged with the younger generation, because every older generation gets discouraged with the newer generation every time. And they don't push past that and pass the knowledge down, because if people don't remember history, they're doomed to repeat it. That is such a true statement, and especially in this community, that is absolutely true. So each one teach one. Go out there. Even if you've got two other people to talk to, go talk to those two people. Go, do the thing. If you've got something to say, say it, and don't be afraid to do so.
I mean, one of the things I say all the time is length of time in the lifestyle does not equal knowledge.
Ooh, ain't that the truth?
I mean, especially lately when we had 2 years of quarantine where nobody was doing anything. Does that count as experience or not?
Right. And who was that experience with? Just the people you were in quarantine with? You mean to tell me whenever COVID was raging, you went out and did pickup play? I ain't believing it, because there was nowhere open to do that. I mean, come on, really? So, yeah, no. I'm completely with you. I am so lucky, so blessed, so fortunate to be one of those people that are long in the tooth and in the experience. And that's why I don't have a need to go out and teach for like marketing or anything anymore. I just do it because I love it. And, you know, getting the different, you know, people look at the United States and they frequently say, you know, oh, well, you don't travel outside of your own country. Well, we kind of don't have to, because I'm telling you right now, the culture, the language, the food, because you can tell a lot of things about the food you're eating, right? And the togetherness and people's different ideas about family and friends and trust all vary from region to region. It's different in Atlanta than it is from Chicago, than it is from New York, than it is from Portland, than it is to San Diego. I would know. I have taught in every single one of those places I just just wound off, because and it's all different. And that's what I love about teaching, is just going around and, you know, telling people and learning so much from them. From the newer people, or from the people that think they're new and they're really not. God, there was one woman, I think this might have been Kinky College in Chicago. And she was talking about, you know, oh, I'm new. And she was a S-type. I think she came to my sassy submission class. And she was like, oh, well, you know, I'm new in the lifestyle, you know, and all this. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, how long you been doing this, you know? Well, with my dominant I'm with now, you know, only a couple of years. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, you know, whenever I was married, though, yeah. And she'd been married prior, you know, they had gotten a divorce for like 20 some odd years. And she described to me their relationship. I'm like, you know, that was a power exchange, right? Just because you didn't call it that doesn't mean it wasn't. You know, that's how she knew protocols and how to serve him, meaning her ex-husband, you know, and all of this. And I'm like, you might want to give yourself a little more credit than what you're giving yourself. And yeah, I think she's a presenter now, a teacher. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I had a play partner once who I think was in the lifestyle like 30 years or something. But up until, well, we played together, she had only played with her husband, her ex-husband, I don't recall. So knowledgeable, but had never negotiated a scene with anybody.
Oh, yeah.
So
I have a story about that.
Okay.
It's story time with Lady Steel, because I'm from the South and I like telling stories. Yay! Hooray! So, this would have been 2018. I was mentoring a small group of, you know, S-types, and we, you know, the great exalted Lady Steel is pouring forth all of the knowledge, right? Yeah, uh-huh. And they said, well, Lady Steel, how do you do pickup play? I said, excuse me? How do you do pickup play? I don't do pickup play. Well, why not? Because everything that I do is so dangerous and edgy, I don't. And honest to gosh, I don't. And they said, well, how are you supposed to teach us if you don't do that? And I was like, good. Damn it. Fine. So I went to Sin in the City, one of the last ones that they held in Las Vegas. And I went out there, got on the cruising section of their app, and did the thing with three different people in one night, because you know me. And and then helped somebody the next day hone his single tail in my own hotel room. You know, his single tail skills and all this. And I came back with all of this knowledge. Why? Because people asked the question. You know, she never had any sort of negotiation experience for all intents and purposes. In all reality, I didn't either, because I knew everybody I played with for years before I played with them or we grew together. And so having just this brand spanking, see what I did there? Brand spanking new people to play with, and, you know, really having to learn the difference between inclusionary and exclusionary negotiations and how important that is. And it was a fantastic learning experience for me. And I actually developed my negotiations class not soon after that.
So I mentioned what one of my catchphrases is. What are some of your catchphrases?
Oh my goodness. Don't consent. I do not consent to any searches, officer. Preserving your Fourth Amendment rights. We were having adult kinky consensual, adult kinky consensual sex. I teach that all the time, my BDSM in the law class. But if you're talking on a non-professional level, each one teach one. That's what I was taught by Lady D and Papa Doug and all the people at the People Exchanging Powerhouse here in Atlanta in the late 90s. And of course it comes from, you know, folks before them, but it really is true. If every single human in this community went and taught just one thing, you know, and it doesn't have to be like an obvious thing, you know, maybe a conflict resolution technique that other people may not practice. You know, Master Sable did a class on that last night. I'm sorry I missed it. I was at work, but like, or just the smallest little thing, you know, oh, you know, you run a scalpel down somebody's body like this. Well, how about like this, you know, or anything. If you go and spread the knowledge, you know, you get the knowledge, you keep the knowledge, you grow it, and you share it. You know, maybe that'll be my new catchphrase. I have one on my FetLife that's actually really good about knowledge. But, yeah, I mean, if I had to distill everything down to one cute expression, it would be each one teach one. Always. Always.
Gotcha. So I'm recalling from when I've taken this class in the past from you, there were protocols you suggested if, you know, the police show up at the dungeon or you're playing at home or something like that. Do you want to talk about those?
I could distill that down really quickly. If you were made to talk to law enforcement, always be polite. You know, they're on a bell curve too. You've got the ones that are in the life that know exactly what's going on, and they're just having to, you know, make the call that they were told to make. And then there's the murderers, you know, on the other side, and hopefully you're not encountering them. But, you know, for the most part, everybody just wants to go home safe, be with their families, you know, at the end of the day. And so if you end up having to speak with law enforcement, that was where the second of the phrases came in. You know, tell them we were having adult, meaning everybody's over the age of 18, kinky, and people kind of have an idea of what that is these days. Consensual. Consent is not codified in, you know, legal code yet, but we're getting there. Sex. And whether you're having sex or not, it kind of gives them an idea, you know, oh, we got a little slap and tickle going on here. Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And I have found that unless it's extreme circumstances, they're going to go, okay, as long as everybody that they talked to that was involved in the situation has, you know, substantially similar stories. Now, one person is standing there giving these robotic answers because that's what they remember Lady Steele saying. And the other person's like, hey, I'm super cool, you know, and all this. That might throw up a red flag. But for all intents and purposes, as long as everybody keeps a cool head and, you know, they are respectful and they just, you know, give them the straight story, then yeah. Most of the time they're able to walk away. They want to search anything, you know, always say, I do not consent to any searches, officer, whether you do or not, by the way, don't, so that preserves your Fourth Amendment search and seizure rights, because they have to have a reason to search your person or a reason to search your bag or a reason to search your car, your hotel room. And if that, you know, level of, you know, if that standard has not been met, then whatever it is that they find gets kicked out. That whole fruit of the poisonous tree you've heard on Law and Order 14,000 times, that's not inaccurate. But you have to preserve your Fourth Amendment rights by saying, I do not consent to any searches. And always add officer at the end because that's polite.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
That is the shortest version of that I've ever given. I'm like, woo, all right.
I was going to say, some of that information I've been able to translate well for, for myself in my daily life of work, especially when interacting with either law enforcement or different things like that for various reasons. And it's been, all right, I've taken this class a few times, always managed to learn. I thought I would take detailed notes, or took detailed notes the first time around, but apparently each time I managed to take even more notes and pick up even more things and such like that. I've been, you know, it's been rather helpful, especially in the, you know, how do you engage and how do you talk and what do you say and what do you not say? Yeah. You know, that's been especially rather helpful, or, you know, including keeping clients calm of, hey, we're not gonna, you know, freak the fuck out. We're gonna take a breath. In the sense of, I need you to not have, you know, the self-rambling and, you know, here.
I'm immensely flattered that it helped. It's my pleasure to serve. You know, anybody who's been to my classes, I always say in the beginning, you know, Or I see people in the hallway, you know, like, hey, you coming to my class? No, I took it last year. Okay. But it's always different. And the people who have been repeat customers, so to speak, realize that that's the case. Because, like, the fundamentals, like the constitutional, U.S. constitutional fundamentals, like Fourth Amendment search and seizure, right? Unless some law, like, drastically changes, then it's that part's going to be the same. But all the stories and all the different iterations that come out after that are going to be different. You know, whenever Roe versus Wade was being stripped, there was a change to the Miranda warning that people didn't even know about. I didn't even know about it because I was too busy raising hell about Roe versus Wade. And somebody in one of my classes, I want to say it was in Florida, they're like, hey, you know, blah, blah about Miranda. And I'm like, what? And Meta is always my, you know, legal researcher whenever I give my classes. And he was like, oh, you've got to read this. They're no longer required to give you, to Mirandize you.
What?
Like, at all. Now, you do have the right to remain silent still. Everything you say can and will be used against you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. All of it's still true, but they are no longer required to verbally say that to you. So now there's no more, oh, well, I said all of this before my Miranda rights, it gets kicked out stuff. And that happened whenever the Roe versus Wade kerfuffle was going on for those months. And it was like, oh, look at here, over here at the horrible things we're doing to Roe versus Wade. Don't look at over here what we're doing to Miranda. Yeah, that's the scary stuff that happens. And, you know, and no lawyer is perfect, no judge is perfect, you know. So whenever I say that, you know, I didn't know, people are like, oh my gosh, you didn't know? No, I was too busy fighting for my uterus, thanks, you know, right. And what is allowed to go in and out of it. And so, yeah, there was a lot of look over here at this. And they were busy, you know, around the corner doing other stuff that a lot of people even now are surprised to hear about. So, that's the kind of stuff you have to look out for. I mean, even as citizens, you know, even as lay people outside the law, you have to look out for that stuff. I'm sure you've encountered similar things in your profession, too. where things change and nobody knows it.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's happened. For example, when paraphilia was taken out, or not taken out, modified, there are still people out there who are practicing out of the old DSM and are still diagnosing people that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know...
And you just want to beat him over the head with it.
Right.
But, you know, that's not consensual, so we're not going to do that.
So, before we transition into the part of the show we like to call Inside the Kinkster Studio, is there anything else you would like to add to the legal part of this show?
No. I mean, if you're curious in regards to what specifically changed... in regards to the model penal code, you great big law nerds out there, I love every one of you because I'm one too. You can go to the NCSF's website and look up the Consent Counts Initiative, and they have the actual parts of the model penal code. Because if you've looked at laws or code or anything, you know, every single line of every paragraph is numbered, you know, and all of this. And you can look that up and download it and have your little PDFs and all that other stuff and read all about it. It's interesting work, and it's, you know, it's a living, breathing thing, and it's evolving every day. So I wanted to make sure that if people are like, hey, I want to know more, that's how you do it. Go to the NCSF's website, or just Google NCSF consent counts, and boom, it's all over your web browser. All over your web browser.
And I will drop a link into the show notes.
Excellent.
To that, and the Kink and Poly Professionals website, as well as your social medias.
Thank you.
I was going to say, if people have further questions on, like, any expansion on that, can they reach out to
Absolutely.
You via FetLife?
You can reach out to me for anything. My life's an open book. I might not respond in a timely fashion. Matter of fact, I may or may not have some messages on a FetLife inbox that are a year old. You know, I'm just saying. Not like legal stuff. Don't do that. No, but like, you know, personal questions and all this other stuff. I promise you, I will get back to you. It might pop up in your inbox a couple of years later. You'll be like, oh my God, I totally forgot I asked that. This is awesome. Hopefully this is awesome. I don't know. I guess it depends on what the answer is. But yes, reach out to me for anything. And I'll be more than glad to entertain it as I have the capacity. Because I definitely have the capability and the willingness.
Awesome. So what is your secret origin story into kink?
Well, I have had kinky sex since the first time I ever, pretty much since the first time I ever had it. I just didn't know it. There was always a power disparity there, or at least a power, and when I say disparity, I don't mean in a negative way. You know, somebody was always the top, somebody was always the bottom, and most of the time I was the bottom. But it goes even deeper than that. I am autistic. And, you know, I call them my superpowers, but one of my gifts of autism is I have an extremely high pain tolerance. I remember whenever I was, goodness, I had to have been 3 or 4, back whenever dinosaurs roamed the earth, and there was no such thing as like the piercing pagoda. You actually had to go to a jeweler who would, you know, pierce your ears sometimes with a needle, sometimes with a gun. And my parents, you know, wanted to take me to get my ears pierced, and they told me all about it, and they said, okay, so this big girl, this teenage girl is going to get hers done before you, and she's really brave, you know, and watch her get it done, and then you'll have an idea of what's going on. And I'm like, okay. So she's bawling and crying and, you know, blah, blah, and all this other stuff. And my parents look at me and say, are you sure you want to do this? I'm like, sign me up. And so I sit there. There was no numbing cream. There was none of that back then. And they shot the earring through my ear. And I just kind of looked at them like, is that all you got? Like, like, where's the fire? And so I learned at a very, very young age that I was a masochist. That is, of course, continued on to this day. And so that turned into, you know, the power exchange during sex, which eventually turned into the sadomasochism during sex. And, you know, I wanted to learn more about it. So in the early 90s, I started reading about it and found that newfangled thing called the internet. Yes, it was newfangled back then. And then I found Yahoo groups and then the People Exchanging Power group, and down the rabbit hole I fell. And here I am today.
All right. What is 3 words that describe your play?
intense, passionate, bloody. Yeah, it usually ends in blood. Not necessarily blood play, but yes, blood play. But not necessarily on purpose. Meta and I play very intensely. But yes, we're very intense, passionate people, y'all know. And yeah, when we play hard. And so, and I tell people this all the time, you know, when the cops come to your door, make sure that you're covered, you know, from your neck to your wrist to your ankles. And I say that to both sides of the slash, because if you play like I do, it's a, you know, kind of a crapshoot as to who's going to have blood on them, who's going to have open wounds. So, yeah, so I would say intense, passionate, and bloody.
Very nice. Thank you. Oh.
Your favorite.
Oh, my favorite?
Yes, ask okay. Your favorite question.
Ask my favorite question. All right, so my favorite question I love to ask people is, what is your favorite curse word?
Hmm. I'm going through all the list that George Carlin gave, right? Fuck is a really good punctuation marker, can be. But you know that you have crossed a line with me when I use motherfucker. And, you know, for me, it's not necessarily a word as much as a state of mind and language. Because I'm sure up there, y'all hear my accent, especially when I say y'all. And ain't, I said ain't one time, I thought it was funny. But, like, whenever I get angry, like, the South Alabama where I was raised comes out. Or sometimes the Cajun, because I was raised for a substantial amount of time in my youth in Baton Rouge and the New Orleans area and all that. And it slip into that. And Meta has always said, when I can't understand you anymore, it's time to run. I'm like, yep, pretty much. That's pretty much it. But yeah, motherfucker. He loves it whenever I get to that point. So we'll stick with a tie between fuck is punctuation and motherfucker as the actual pejorative. So.
Fair. All right. So last question is my favorite question to ask. If you had to have sex with one Muppet, which Muppet would it be and why?
Well, it's funny you should say that. I have a thing. I have a middle. And I do not like crossing sex with children things. So that would be none. I can't do it. Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, and here's the funny part. My middle is a darkling. I will have sex in middle headspace. But, like, if you send me, you know, a picture of Kermit on the cross and Miss Piggy beating him in her, you know, her BDSM outfit and all this, as I've gotten 15 million times, right? It just squicks me out. It's like the weirdest thing. I know it makes no sense. I have tried to break that down and unpack that more times than I could care to count. And I have just said, since we're allowed to say fuck it, and just let me be who it is that I am. Now, where's the line? I don't know. You might send me a meme, or I've done this with Meta, where I've sent him something. He's like, wait, this doesn't cross the line? Are you kidding me with this? And I'm like, no, of course not. And he's like, I have questions. I'm like, I'm sure you do. God, Lord. Oh, well, you know, okay. Let me see if I can find a loophole, because I'm a lawyer, right? So here's the loophole. You ready? So David Bowie starred in, what was it, The Black Crystal? No.
Labyrinth.
I'm sorry?
No, he starred in the... Yeah, it was...
Labyrinth.
The Labyrinth, yeah. That had Muppets in it. So technically, you know, if everybody else can be a Disney... If Frankenfurter from, you know, Rocky Horror can be a Disney princess, then David Bowie could be a Muppet, and I am totally down with that. There you go. Ta-da.
That's fair. That works. That's
y'all
fair.
Knew I was going to like get out of that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been great to talk to you about BDSM and the law.
It's my absolute pleasure.
For our listeners, we have upcoming classes on dollar store domination, knife play, electro play.
Nice.
Body language coming up both virtually and in person. Check our website for locations and details. But that's it. That's our show. Say goodnight, little bit.
Good night, little bit.
Mazel tov!
Follow us on Facebook, FetLife, Twitter, Tumblr, and YouTube as Synagogue BDSM
and on Instagram and TikTok as Synagogue Kink. If you enjoyed or learned something from this podcast, consider making a donation via PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, Patreon, or Ko-fi. Username Synagogue, or find those links to all of those on our website, synagoguebdsm.com. Remember, that's synagogue with an I. Also on the website, links to past episodes, upcoming classes, book us as educators, shop our store, and more.
Synagogue hosts and guests are subject matter experts, but are not the expert. We believe that, outside of violating consent, there is no wrong way to do kink, except to think your way is the only way. This show is presented from a RAC, risk-aware consensual kink, point of view, and not SSC, safe, sane, consensual, because every individual's definition of safe is different based on their own risk profile. The use of the word safe on this show fits our definition of safe, and that does not have to be your definition. Opinions expressed by guests on the show are those of the person expressing the opinion, not of the show.
Just a reminder, we try to make our content as inclusive as possible, regardless of gender, orientation, role in the lifestyle, etc. But we do inherently speak from our own point of view. For the most part, substitute our identity with your own to make it work. We want to know when we make a mistake, so we can learn and grow from those mistakes. So if you feel like we did say something that is genuinely offensive, we encourage you to let us know. Reach out to us with your questions, comments, or concerns via our website, or call us at 469-269-0403.
Brought to you today by the letters and the number.
San Diego High School football rules!